You know, I was in London last week and I went to three different burger joints on three of the days and for lunch on my own. One was Five Guys, which is known in Washington. It's now in London, which is freaking amazing. I got this burger. I couldn't believe it. Because it was kind of like 12 quid or something like that. I was like, that's kind of pricey sterling. And I could see why. They just, everything's in it. Then Shake Shack, which is another.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Washington and New York and now London. And the third one is Byron, which is a beautiful burger.
Okay.
If I could recommend.
The only one I've ever seen burgers. Did you ever watch Richard E. Grant's Hotel Secrets?
I haven't seen it. It's good.
It's very good. Well, he did one reason in Las Vegas and he went to some place that's famous for its Kobe beef burger. And
yeah.
It's like you buy the burger meal and you pay thousands. You get this really good bottle of wine and a free night in their presidential suite.
I want
and
it.
And it's just really funny. Yeah, he made burgers look good.
Yeah.
Watching him eat it.
He went to Ashford Castle in that tour.
That's right, he did.
Well.
Yeah. It's a really good show, actually.
I'd love to see that.
Because he's so excited just to have that as a job. He's like a little kid. He's like, people pay me to do this.
I'd love that job. What channel is it on?
This is Sky Atlantic, I think,
Sky
Brian.
Atlantic.
We've
I
talked about that channel
no,
before.
I don't
yeah.
have that. Mad Men was on that last week and I don't have
yeah,
it either.
Yeah.
Damn them all.
It's a great channel.
Nina Burns, lovely to see you and welcome.
Morning.
And you brought a little bit of left luggage with you this morning in the form of the delightful Alex, who was telling me about her Easter eggs. I didn't know there was a One Direction Easter egg available.
There you go. Alex
it.
Will fill you in on all things One Direction. We're a big One Direction fan, yeah.
And a Niall fan with that.
Big Niall fan.
Proper Irish girl, she is.
Yeah.
Okay, so lots to talk about, obviously. Can I ask you to mention, we were just talking briefly about Angelina Jolie and that article I read that really stayed with me about these rape camps in Bosnia and what they were doing and that this was happened after World War II in Berlin. As Anthony Beaver wrote about, and then equally it happens in war zones.
Yeah.
And there you are as a GP in Dublin 15,
mm-hmm.
and you see a little bit of that traffic coming through your door.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dublin 15 is a very multicultural part of Ireland, and I have a large number of patients who've migrated from Africa, and particularly, I suppose, I have a number of patients who've come from the Congo. And I think the Congo is not getting a lot of press, but what's going on there, the stories I'm hearing from these patients are really shocking. Like, they talk about people going through villages and just selecting women and children and raping them purely as a means of control. I've patients whose children have been taken as child soldiers. These people have come from really difficult backgrounds. They have family members who they've no contact with. They've no idea what's going on over there. And what they describe is almost, you know, we spoke a lot about Rwanda's anniversary recently, but it's not dissimilar on a smaller scale to what went on there at times. And I think we forget, the message from Rwanda was, let's not forget. We have to remember these things are still going on in the world. And I really admire people who can use their status. Like Angelina Jolie does a lot of work with the United Nations and with various charities, and I think we shouldn't knock people like that. If they use their celebrity to draw attention to these, all the better.
Well, our default position as a social networking generation is to knock first, ask questions later.
Yeah.
And yet you see Angelina Jolie doing what she does and you see what you're talking about coming through the door, and it just opens your eyes and ears to that. You could be sitting beside somebody on the bus who is just not long here from the Congo or whatever, and you wouldn't know what class of story they have to tell.
Yeah,
because we tend to see refugees.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Pigeonholed.
I think we get a lot of people who give migrant populations a lot of bad press. And look, I always say, if I was in a country like that and my children had a choice of getting out of there and coming to somewhere like Ireland and growing up or staying and being exposed, you would beg, borrow, or steal, Ryan. You know, we have children. You would do anything to improve the life for your children.
And it's funny, I was listening to a documentary over the last few days about the famine and the Irish famine and 1845 right up to, and literally the countries that we went to just to say, God, actually it was people who had a few bob were the ones lucky to get out.
Yeah.
The really poor couldn't afford the ticket, so they stayed and got decimated. They were like a million dead here. And then there was in the interviews, Miles Dungan interviewing Mary Robinson saying that she went to Somalia and she said it was Ireland.
Yeah.
And how we should have just a much more open attitude to bringing people in. That isn't say open the floodgates, to use the tabloidism, but equally just to be a bit more aware.
Well, we're a migrant people. I mean, my great 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 grandfather, because obviously my father is American, but he's fourth generation, got a boat, in famine times, went over and got straight off the boat in America and fought in the Civil War. That's what they did. They took Irish people and they went and they fought for a country they didn't even know. And in the States for years, they had signs of no Irish need apply. So we should be more understanding of populations. We are what we are. We have so many people around the world because other countries welcomed us. And I actually, it's something I feel really strongly about, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not something we intended to talk about, but it's certainly intriguing because there's so much in that, and we'll just have to let it percolate and think about ourselves in the next day or two. But let's talk about the questions that have come in to see you, including this one, which says, I had a bout of vertigo and 4 weeks later, I'm still slightly lightheaded. Is this normal?
Yeah, unfortunately, vertigo can linger in some people. I mean, the most common cause of vertigo, which is the sense of a room spinning around and almost that feeling of being slightly drunk, is the best way to describe it. Most commonly occurs after a viral respiratory infection. So the original infection itself can be quite mild, a bit of a blocked nose, you know, a bit of a cough. But what happens is then you get congestion that affects your balance cells in the inner ear. And to be honest, it can take 6 to 8 weeks to settle fully in some people. Things can help are drinking plenty of fluids, being dehydrated can make it worse. And actually, there are a number of physiotherapists who can do special exercises. There's a theory that you might get grit in your balance cells.
Yeah.
And there's a number of special exercises can be done through physios to help improve that. So if it's going on a long time and not getting better, talk to your doctor about going to see someone who can maybe help you with that.
Okay, sounds good. And what brings on vertigo, do we know? It's because you can get vertigo just from standing up. You don't have to be on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Well, you see, now that's the people talk about that sense of dizziness when you're looking down. I suppose that's not vertigo in its true sense. It's a sense of dizziness in a room spinning around you. So you don't have to be standing up or looking at a height. It's like you're sitting and you feel dizzy doing nothing, okay? Mm-hmm. So it can come on. Respiratory infections are one of the most common causes, ear infections. Then obviously different things. If you have hearing issues, you can be more prone to vertigo. And in some people, it can be nerve issues or balance issues. So there's a whole load of different causes, actually. But the treatment, there are some prescription medications can help as well.
Okay, at 51552, text says, my three-year-old daughter barely eats anything, banana, cheese, string, apples, small yogurts and bits like that. She refuses to drink milk in any form, be they milkshakes or anything else. I'm at my wit's end with her. Any chance of some help?
Okay, look, it's natural for toddlers to be fussy about what they eat. I don't think I've seen a child who, I don't believe in the children eat like loads of different foods, especially at toddler stage. Children who've eaten everything as infants may become quite fussy about textures and colours. So the thing is to make food interesting, help them get involved a bit, try different things. They might not like mushed carrots, they might like raw carrots, they might have a certain taste for a certain fruit and not others, or they might like it if you chop it up different ways. You know, they can be very fussy like that. Just remember, milk, obviously dairy is hugely important to growing children, but milk is not the only way to get dairy. And also milk, if you cook it into foods, it's not broken down. So for instance, although pancakes have sugar in that, it is a way of getting dairy into a child's, because you use milk to make them. If you sauces that contain milk, if she won't like milkshakes, occasionally ice cream. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't go for the high sugar ones straight off, but cheese, again, you mentioned she takes cheese, that's dairy. So there are lots of different ways of getting dairy in, and just whatever it is, don't turn it into a battle, but also keep going back, because it takes at least 10 tries for someone to acquire a taste of something. We're born liking sweet food. That comes, we all know, we all like sweet food. But it actually takes up to 10 goes of trying something new before you should say, I don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to revisit a lot of my dietary habits.
I was
going to
say, Ryan, maybe you should go off and start again.
Oh, I'm a desperate creature habit. Yeah. I just like the same stuff over and over again.
And taste change over time as well.
God, I haven't known. That gene passed me right by it, unfortunately. Although, do you know what I had the other night for dessert, which was absolutely gorgeous at home, was a slice of vanilla ice cream and jelly.
I love ice cream.
It was delicious.
And actually, I love jelly.
Do you know what the jelly is? So if you don't have the time or the patience to make the jelly,
you can buy the ready-made one.
The little tub. So that you just have the one. So whip it into the bowl, a slice of the, you know, the vanilla ice cream from the block, and scoop it all together.
See, I like ice cream in any forms. I'm a big, big ice cream fan.
They're coming into your season now.
I know.
We're singing your song.
I can't go for a walk down the pier without partaking in a certain South Dublin ice cream establishment.
So much so that you called your child after.
God, now you say it.
Okay.
Never thought about that.
Let's keep going. Nina, I have an underactive thyroid, says Suzanne, and I have had my blood taken and everything is normal. I'm constantly exhausted and have no energy. I feel like I'm losing my mind. Please help.
Yeah, well, obviously, an underactive thyroid can cause tiredness or fatigue. But unfortunately for a lot of people, they think when they're diagnosed with an underactive thyroid, it will be the solution to all their symptoms, and it often isn't. So obviously, it's important to make sure it's controlled, which it clearly is if the bloods are normal. But then other things, again, one of the most common causes of fatigue is just not drinking enough fluids. I know it's something I say a lot, but, a litre and a half to 2 litres a day. Make sure other vitamins like your B vitamins, your vitamin D levels, things like that aren't low. Eat regularly through the day. Again, a lot of people go hours without eating, and that can make you feel more tired. Small amounts constantly through the day is better. And, you know, the other thing is actually exercise. You know, if you're active and you exercise, you'll have more energy than if you don't. Which I know it seems weird. If you're exhausted, the last thing you want to do is exercise. But even getting out for a walk, and hopefully the weather better, getting out in some fresh air, it does make a difference.
I was all set to just veg on the couch the other day, and just because exhausted after a very hectic week and when everything else in between. And I thought, no, do you know what? I think a walk would probably do me good. And as soon as I got out and the air hit, I thought, oh, that was a good decision.
Oh, it's great just to get outside. Like, just we actually just sat out in the garden and had lunch yesterday, and it was just so nice just to do that.
The sun was okay, and it wasn't too cold. It was nice. I like when that happened. Just getting over 3 weeks of illness. I also had the shingles, feeling very weak. What should I take as a build me up?
Yeah, well, look, there's nothing. I mean, shingles is a reactivation of the chickenpox virus in your own body. We don't know what causes it to flare, but actually stress or fatigue can be a trigger for it. So it may not so much be that you're tired after shingles. It may have been tired going into shingles. Mm-hmm. People do report feeling tired for a number of weeks after, though, because it is a virus. Just general healthy eating, all the things I usually say, getting plenty sleep, eating well, exercising. Look, I'm not a big fan of vitamins, and there are lots of studies to say that actually taking too many vitamins is not good for you. However, if your diet hasn't been great, you know, taking just a general multivitamin for a couple of weeks can be enough. You don't need high doses of super vitamins, really. Yeah. And the only vitamin I ever recommend in the winter is vitamin D, and that's because it's actually very hard to get in diet.
Okay, yeah. Okay, all good advice. Can you ask Nina if a baby, 6-month-old baby, has a slight touch of eczema, is it okay for them to have yogurts made from goat's milk instead of full dairy ones?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't automatically blame the dairy for the eczema. Eczema is very common, and it starts to show in and around 6 months in most children. The most common cause of it is that there's a family history of eczema. So dairy gets a lot of bad press, and it upsets me because obviously it's incredibly important for a child, a growing child, to have plenty of dairy. At 6 months, you can use cow's milk, but I don't normally introduce full cow's milk till they're nearly a year. I mean, from 6 months on, they say you can use it if you're preparing meals, a small amount of cow's milk. But I wouldn't rush in with yogurts regularly. I mean, they still should be getting formula at that stage. If you notice that the skin gets worse after a yogurt, fair enough, cut it out. But I would almost say if they're only 6 months and you think their skin is getting worse after cow's milk, then leave the cow's milk out until they're over a year. And then the other thing I would say is if they're on normal formula, remember that's actually made with cow's milk. So it would be very unusual that they would react, say, to yogurts and not milk, because usually when there's a dairy allergy, it's the pure form of milk is the one that causes more allergy than the yogurts themselves.
Good. My daughter's almost 10 months old. She was diagnosed with a mild hip dysplasia when she was born and was put into Pavlik harness at 8 days old and wore for 7 weeks when the scan revealed it could be removed. Has since had one or two checkups. All is fine. Last one about 4 months ago. But I was told that the minute she takes independent steps to make appointment for checkup. However, absolutely no sign of walking yet, and I'm feeling a little uneasy and would like another check on her hip. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't expect a 10-month-old baby to be walking. So, you know, at 10 months, they usually start crawling around 9 months, pulling themselves to stand. The average age for walking is around a year. So, I mean, it sounds like this baby has been managed correctly. The hip was picked up very early on. They were put in the harness. They've been followed up. So if your baby is progressing normally, at this age, they should be sitting and maybe trying to crawl. Some babies would be pulling themselves to stand. So I wouldn't worry that the baby's not walking at 10 months, because that's quite normal, actually. Yeah. But obviously, if they're making no signs of mobilising themselves at all, then maybe have them checked. But, you know, I can understand how you're being hyper-vigilant about this. But just to reassure you, most 10-month-old babies are not walking.
OK. Can you ask Nina if she knows anything about hypothalamic hamartoma?
Hamartoma.
He has it here. I'm a 22-year-old male. I think I might have it. Is that what it is? I've never heard of that.
No, quite specific. I mean, your hypothalamus is part of your brain that controls a lot of hormones that control the body, but I'm not familiar with the hypothalamic hamartoma, I have to say.
Type of tumour or something. Anyway, either way, we don't want to say that too much, but other than to say, get yourself to your GP if you're worried.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't worry about us too much.
But it sounds like a very specific diagnosis. So, you know, obviously the GP would do some tests, and if it's
an neurologist
refer you
or whatever.
To an endocrinologist, probably.
Endocrinologist, even better. Yeah. Speaking of which, could you tell me something about endocrine glands, please? Text.
Well, your endocrine glands are the hormone glands, so they're all over our body. They're the glands that, you know, they're in the brain. The hypothalamus obviously produces a lot of the what we call the precursors to various hormones, and you have your thyroid gland, and then you have your pancreas produces insulin. So any gland that produces a hormone is technically an endocrine gland, and they are essential to the functioning of the body. And there's a specialty in its own right. there's a whole host of diseases associated with problems with endocrine glands.
Okay, so you need to be a bit more specific.
Yeah.
Essentially, I am feeling very low at the moment, says the text. I have a recurrent depression. What can I do to help myself cope? I'm so low, I can't carry out daily functions on Lexapro and Gerax, or Gerax, but no change. Going to try CBT. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I'm an absolute believer that there are many arms to treatment of depression, and you're on medication, which is only one arm, and I often refer to it as the crutch. So all the other stuff is essential. CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy, which I think is absolutely essential. And the other thing is I encourage people to practice mindfulness, which is based on Buddhist principles, to be honest, but it looks at meditation and awareness of the here and now, awareness of your mood and its triggers. I also encourage people to lead a healthy lifestyle. There's lots of evidence to show that exercise and eating well help with mood. But whatever you're doing, you know, I'm glad you're contacting us. I hope you're talking to other people, because that's absolutely key. Aware.ie is a great support for people with depression. And stay linked in with your GP. And yes, absolutely go for CBT and anything else you can do to help yourself.
We end today on this query, which says, I got a bang on my head from a boot of a car over 3 months ago and I still have a bad headache.
Go and talk to your doctor about it.
Get that sorted out straight away if you can. All right, Dr. Nina Burns, thank you so much for coming to see us, as always.
It's nice to be here.
The text number is 51552. You can email tubs@rte.ie.